Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio joining us this afternoon from London, England. And with that, Tom, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you too, Lockwood.
Now, my question to you, Tom, as we begin the program, the weather. What's the weather like in your fair community of London?
Well, for the fourth week running, it's beautiful. It's mid-70s still. We're not having quite enough rain. We're about to have some rain. The garden will say thank you very much indeed. But it's been a glorious summer. At the very beginning, it was pretty miserable. A couple of weeks misery at the beginning of the summer, cold and wet. Mm-hmm. But it's turning out absolutely incredible. Not too hot, not too cold.
Now,
just right.
Now, is this typical for this time of year?
There's no such thing as typical weather in Britain. There really isn't. I mean, I had one summer where it was like this, and it rained every other day between midnight and 5 a.m. So the garden was lovely. It was lovely and fresh and sunny during the day. And that went on for 3 months. Perfect summer. I had another summer where it rained every day between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m.
Okay, so in essence, you're looking at a typical year for you. You say it's not typical, but you have a variety
of
seasons.
I'm saying there's no such thing as typical.
Okay. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon from London, England. And just to remind everyone that this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule since it's some 5 hours ahead of us here in the States. And Tom, obviously the top of the question for us today, and I'm always interested in the views of the U.S. events, and I'm curious about the coverage of events here in the States, particularly with President Trump. And, well, yesterday's hearing, House efforts to criticize the president, which, by the way, interestingly enough, is illegal. You're not allowed to criticize the president from the floor of the House or the Senate. But what kind of coverage is that story getting there in the European community?
Oh, front page every day.
Really?
I don't think there's a newspaper in the UK or Europe which hasn't used the R word to describe President Trump.
Okay, meaning racist.
Racist, yes.
Okay.
It's interesting to note as well that Theresa May has said that his comments about the Squad of Four were, quote, unacceptable. Boris Johnson, who is likely to be next prime minister, has said the same thing. Jeremy Hunt, who is running against Boris Johnson, has said the same thing, that they are totally unacceptable. Johnson was asked whether or not he was a racist. That is, if President Trump was a racist, he said, I don't want to say anything about that, but you can draw your own conclusions from what I have already said.
Now, my question to you is, why is that perceived as racist there? And of course, I have to ask that, of course, there in the States as well. What's so, racially directed here?
Well, the four women concerned are all women of color. That's a start.
Okay, so
that is a start.
But my question to you, wait.
And so, you know, that is, you know, it's like walking up to someone in the street. I mean, you know, people do it here, and they're considered racist if they do. If they walk up to someone from Pakistan or South Asia or Africa and say, you should go home to where you came from.
But what about,
that is a racist remark.
But what about you, Tom? What about you,
if they did it to me, I would consider it a racist remark. And
why?
I have had people tell that to me.
Why would you consider it a racist remark to you, Tom?
Why? Because I'm from a different country.
Well, that's not race. That's geopolitical. That has, I mean.
All right. Well, we'll say, I will accept that I'm of the same race. I'm Caucasian. But, you know, the same thing would apply. And we get it here. We have a lot of Polish and Polish workers.
Mm-hmm.
And we have people who are, are British citizens who go up to the Polish workers and they say, go back to where you came from.
But
you're not welcome here.
But that's not racist.
Now, I would consider that racist against Poles, even though they are Caucasian.
Okay, that I would call that nationalist.
And I think if you had a Polish worker in New York or North Carolina and people didn't like him and went up to him and said, you should go back to your own country. You're not welcome here. I would say that was racist as well.
Okay, I think you've expanded the description of racist. You know, one of the issues that I'm wondering, and this is something that hasn't been discussed by very many folks, just in case you're interested, I'm ambiphobiaist, I think is the right word. I have a great deal of concern for people who might be left-handed. And I'm wondering if the gang of the squad, or those that the president was focusing on, might be left-handed. By the way, Tom, are you?
I am left-handed at the moment, Lockwood. I don't know why you're talking to me. I broke my right arm and I can't use my right hand so well.
Oh, well, you're left-handed. Okay, that explains our conflicts here on Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, I've got to go to other items associated with the events here in the U.S. and, of course, the topic of the squad. Was there much coverage of the criticism of the Speaker of the House, a Democrat, I might add, by the members of the squad? The other question, of course, goes to the fact that you've got the events that's led up to the squad's dispute with the president. And that, of course, was Nancy Pelosi was criticized by the members of the squad for her observations related to, well, quite frankly, they claimed she was racist. Now, what coverage was received, was that given, by the way?
Not a great deal that I saw. But I was going to say that a lot of people here are coming to conclusion there might be a method to Donald Trump's madness in making the tweets he did, and that he is possibly trying to link the squad to the wider Democratic Party by saying that their views, the views of these four women, are the views of the wider Democratic Party, or will be very shortly. And therefore, if you support the Democratic Party, you're supporting the views of these far-left women. And that, you know, I'm not saying that's correct, but I think it could be a, you know, something which could appeal to a lot of voters.
You know, that's interesting. And yet you've got Boris Johnson, who's, you said moments ago, critical of the president. Yet the president is using good political game theory, if you want to use it, describe it as that, game theory.
If that is his theory.
If that's the case, then more power to him. I find that fascinating that people are thinking that. All right. But the other aspect of this, and this goes to the issue of that term racism, and I'm just curious, is that a topic that is often used in the political environment there in the United Kingdom, in Europe, the whole issue of the racial divide? What's the status there in the European community?
Oh, yes. It's a big problem here. I mean, it's the reason why you have a far left, far right coalition in Italy. It's one of the big reasons you have Brexit. It causes the rise of the Front National in France, the rise of the Alternative for Deutschland in Germany, Geert Wilders in the Netherlands. Yes, and Viktor Orban in Hungary.
Tom,
yes, race is an issue.
Tom, what about
they say it's immigration, but you know, race is part of immigration.
Oh well, wait a second. Is it immigration? Is it economics? Is it an issue of this assimilation? You know, that's the other aspect of this. A lot of we've seen this in our country here. A lot of people move into the country and do not choose to assimilate, and they may maintain their enclaves. But in some instances, in this particular case, in major cities, Little Italy, Chinatown, organized facilities such as that, but there is an understanding and assimilation. And I'm wondering, and we don't have much time to discuss this because we've got to go to a break, but my question is it really race, or is it issue of national and moral and cultural differences along with economics? I'm stunned.
It's all mixed together, and generally speaking, the second generation do assimilate. It's very difficult for a first generation to assimilate. Yeah, they move to where to communities where they can speak the same language and can feel comfortable and things like that. It's a perfectly natural thing to want to do. But their children and grandchildren move out of the centers of Los Angeles, Chicago, Manchester, and Birmingham, and they move out into the wider community. We've seen it time and time again. Look at the Irish, you know, look at the Italians. Okay. But, you know, they're all over America now.
But here's the kicker, Tom, and that is, and this is one of the complaints that the president expressed, and I think it's appropriate, and that is the Squad of Four have been hypercritical of this country and, in fact, have celebrated efforts to actually demean this country. And I'm just curious about that with Great Britain.
No, they've been hypercritical of Donald Trump.
Donald Trump
has conflated the values the country with his own beliefs.
Tom, the stomping on the flag by the members of the women's soccer team. I'm just curious. Do the Brits appreciate when people want to demean and tear down the United Kingdom? I don't believe it. And we've seen this here. And we've actually seen this on the part of members of Congress and particularly members of the Squad. So I'm just curious, Tom. What about that? Have you had members of Parliament who've wanted?
No, we haven't.
Oh,
we have not.
Okay, that's fine.
I can think of no instances of any member of Parliament doing that. They have been critical of government policy,
okay,
but not to the extent of tearing down the Union Jack and stomping on it or burning it. I think that the U.S. is more or less alone in that respect.
Okay.
I don't think of many countries who do that.
Okay. All right, that's
it's not, you know, I mean, it's lots of people in America who do it. But, and of course, as we know, there was a case before the Supreme Court, and it was deemed to be
freedom of speech,
allowable
freedom of
under
speech.
The Constitution,
okay.
First Amendment.
Okay, I just think that's important. That's significant in our conversation. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We've got a lot of other things to talk about, including the moon. Stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, just another quick note here, and we'll get on to issues that incorporate U.S., European, and Iranian events, but the topic of the moon. And I'm just curious, this coming Saturday, supposedly mankind's walk on the moon. There are some who think it's a hoax. I'm curious. Let's start with that first question.
And the Holocaust didn't take place either.
Okay, I'm wondering in that case, it's nothing to smile about, but I acknowledge your observation on that one. The moonwalk.
Earth is flat.
Yes, that's correct. And that started, as I recall, somewhere in your community there.
And there's still a flat earth society.
There is. And man will not fly society too. Next question, though, about the moon. Is there a lot of, coverage on that? Anything happening in
yes.
Oh, really?
No, they've all got special supplements. By the way, mm-hmm. on the last night, which was, of course, the anniversary of the beginning of the Apollo 11 mission.
Moonshot, right.
Yeah, moonshot. There was a lunar eclipse here.
Right. And
I thought it was very appropriate. I looked out the window, oh my goodness, there's a lunar eclipse on the same day that the 50th anniversary of the moonshot.
Right. Now, I tell you, quick question for you. Do you recall vividly the day where you were the day they stepped onto the moon?
Yes, I was... I can't remember the name of the theater, but I was at a theater in Columbia, Maryland, watching it on a huge television screen.
Okay. Wow. All right. So you were here in the States. And by the way, for those who are not aware of this, in spite of his accent, we'll call it that, Tom is an expat. He's a U.S. citizen and now has been living way too long in the United Kingdom, where he has garnered too much of their I want to say socialist, but you would say social democrat attitudes.
Not even that. I'm just liberal.
Oh, liberal. Okay. All right. So the moon. Will there be any celebrations, any events happening there in the UK and Europe that you know of?
I don't know of any. Okay. I mean, there's a lot of speeches. There's a lot of dinners and things like that, but no big demonstration like a rally at Trafalgar Square or anything like that.
Okay.
Or marches. That's where the United States should take credit for a job well done.
Well, thank you very much. Let's move on to, well, as an American,
on behalf of all of humanity.
Well, that's true. Let's talk now about events there. This probably will go beyond our break. Let's talk about the events there in the UK. Of particular note, you mentioned Boris Johnson, odds on favorite for the prime minister. I saw a note, and I'd like to see if this is wrong, that his opponent, Mr. Hunt, has stated he would support Boris Johnson as prime minister.
Well, if he's elected.
Oh, okay. I thought it was
okay. Yeah. I mean, you know, if he's elected, he would support him, and it would be expected Jeremy Hunt would be given a senior position in the cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, he's done reasonably well. And Boris is now the heads-on, way-ahead favorite to become prime minister next week. By the way, as we're speaking, Theresa May is speaking to the House of Commons, giving her what might be called valedictorian speech, you know, her farewell address.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't heard it, obviously, because she's in the middle of it now, got a brief look at some of the highlights, and she will be attacking populism and nationalism and racism.
Let me, to journalists. Let me interrupt you on that one. Populism and nationalism.
In the United States and Europe.
Okay. She doesn't see Brexit as a nationalist issue and a populist issue?
No, not quite. She sees a no-deal Brexit as a nationalist and populist issue, but she would argue that there was a referendum and that she was given the remit of abiding by the rules of that referendum, and she did the best she could. And so that was not a populist issue in itself. But
really?
But to turn your back on to try and destroy your economy and break up the United Kingdom in order to achieve Brexit on a no deal basis, that is populism.
I'm perceiving that as a nuance. She's nuancing this issue. I find that a little shocking. Okay, let's talk about.
Well, I think what was most interesting, what I said, was that she is by association attacking Donald Trump as well.
Well,
the two have obviously got on very well, and she's going to spend the last week or two in her office, one or two weeks at 10 Downing Street, making sure that everyone knows that she doesn't like Trump.
Okay, well, that's fine. That's not a big shock to anyone here. The other question has to do with the election process for the prime minister. You said a moment ago that Boris Johnson is the odds-on favorite. If that happens, what happens to Brexit?
Well, he says that come hell or high water, he is going to withdraw from the EU, deal or no deal, on the 31st of October, and that's it.
Okay.
Now, it's very interesting that this week the new Commission President, Ursula von Leyen, has said that she said before the European Parliament that, in fact, she is prepared to extend the deadline again.
Okay.
Which does put the pressure on Boris. He doesn't have to withdraw without a deal on the 31st of October, but deadline can be extended again.
Now, maybe there's an effort here by the potential new prime minister to signal that the European Union needs to be more forthcoming and working closer with the UK in this elimination.
They work very close with the UK. The problem is the UK cannot agree on the backstop for Ireland.
Right.
And the EU has a responsibility to protect its members.
Mm-hmm.
And Ireland remains a member of the EU.
Okay.
And most of its trade is through the UK. A lot of it is across the Irish, northern and southern Irish border. And, of course, there's a problem of security. And it's been said that if they introduce a hard border in order to create a customs border, then that will cause the security problems to boil up again, and you end up with the troubles in Ireland all over again. Both the UK and EU say they do not want a hard border, but neither one is able to come up with a solution to the problem. The only one that's come up with a solution to the problem is the EU, but the UK has rejected that solution, but they have not come up with an alternative solution.
Okay, quick question before we go to the break related to the issue of Brexit. What's the mood among the business community in the European and the United Kingdom?
Well, most of them are absolutely petrified.
Okay.
First of all, it's the uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be deal? No deal.
Right.
So there's that. And so no one is really investing in the UK.
Okay.
The inward investment is drying up. And it has been for the last 18 months or so.
All right. And then, but the other question, and it has to do with the fact that, the European, the economy though seems to be moving along pretty smoothly in the United Kingdom.
Well, that's because we had a lot of inward investment in the past.
Okay.
You know, I mean, we are a great place, as members of the EU. We are a great place to invest, especially for American companies, but generally any company, because English is lingua franca. London is a great place to live. They've got great schools and everything else. They've got great transport connections.
Okay.
It is an offshore shipping base
right.
Into Europe.
All right. Okay.
It attracts more. It has attracted more investment, foreign investment, than any other country in Europe because of it. Now, these people have been coming in over the past 20 years. They're not all going to leave at once, and so we're still getting the benefit. But they are gradually pulling up stakes and starting to pull out. And, of course, the new people are not coming in to replace them. It will make an impact. If there is no deal, and people see the absolute the problems that arise from this, then they're going to move a lot faster out.
All right, we're going to get back to this and more in just a moment with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, I want to now work on issues of international area here in just a moment. Quick question related to the British ambassador to the United States and recent disclosures of yet more critical remarks about the president of the U.S. What's happening there with the ambassador? What's the future for another ambassador?
Well, we were thinking that perhaps Theresa May might appoint a new ambassador before she leaves office, but that looks unlikely. So it will probably be the new Prime Minister Boris Johnson who will appoint someone.
Okay. Let's talk now about the UK and Iran, and I saw earlier today that the UK is sending yet another warship to the Persian Gulf. What's the situation there with the United Kingdom and the Iranian?
Well, of course, the reason why was because the UK stopped this Iranian tanker at Gibraltar.
Uh-huh.
And the Iranians responded by trying to board a British tanker going through the Straits of Hormuz. And made it absolutely clear that it was in retaliation for the stopping of the Iranian tanker at Gibraltar. The British claim the two are totally unrelated, that, you know, the reason why they stopped the tanker at Gibraltar had nothing to do with the dispute over the Iran nuclear accord or shipments out of the Gulf. It was simply because the tanker was breaching sanctions against Syria.
Right.
But the Iranians refused to accept that. I think you have to look at the historic relations between Britain and Iran. The U.S. is enemy number one.
Okay.
Public enemy number one in Iran. Public enemy number two is Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And quite often they will go for public enemy number two almost as a proxy.
Got you. Okay. Well,
it's because Britain was the colonial power.
Right. I understand that. The real issue here, of course, has to do with the future of Iran and also with Europe's relationship with Iran. And, of course, we wonder here why everyone thinks that Iran is a peaceful, peace-loving community when they've been basically distributing terrorism around the world.
They don't think that.
They don't.
No one thinks that.
Okay.
No one thinks that at all. But they think that it's much better to jaw than war.
All right. Well.
And that Trump is talking us into a war.
No. Okay.
That's what they're afraid of.
Okay. Let's talk now about keeping in that vein of the world. Turkey, NATO, and Russia. You have an interesting story on there as well.
Well, yes, of course, you know, the Turks have taken delivery of the S-400 missiles.
Right.
And, of course, Trump has said that you can't have the F-35 planes. And then he's blamed the Obama administration for this. And in such a way that it seems interesting that he has almost apologized to the Turks that you know that they have to take this course, and it's all down to Barack Obama that they did, because Barack Obama refused to sell them the Patriot missiles, because the Turks back in 2013 not only wanted to have the missiles,
mm-hmm.
they wanted to have the technology so that they could make the missiles and export the missiles,
mm-hmm.
Which the U.S., the Pentagon was, and State Department were both very much opposed to. It's difficult to understand. I was speaking today to a British diplomat, and they're just shaking their head. Erdogan is, they think, a personality dictatorship in the old mode.
Right, right.
And they just, you know, everything he does seems to be to further the cause and beliefs of Recep Tayyip Erdogan with little regard to Turkish and certainly no regard to NATO interests.
Right. And I would argue it's a he's trying to reestablish the Ottoman Empire. That would be my description. And he's intentionally been a disruptor throughout the Middle East and then the process.
But you like disruptors.
I like disruptors when it comes to internal politics, not to external politics, but that's another story. Speaking of disruptors, let's talk about this for a moment. And I know it's not on our list. North Korea, and of course, Kim Jong-un has announced that because of military actions, actually training with South Korea, that he is threatening to expand his nuclear weaponry all over again. What's the feeling about the events in North Korea there in the UK?
Well, nobody here particularly trusts Kim Jong-un.
Oh, good. Okay. All right.
Nobody trusts him. I mean, he's totally untrustworthy.
Okay. I think we all agree on that one. Let's talk about the Ukrainian elections. What's happening there in the Ukraine?
A few weeks ago, you had presidential elections. You had a comedian elected as president. He's now President Zelensky, who had his own television program about being president and just turned it into real life. And this Sunday, they're having parliamentary elections.
Okay.
Now, he's been quite successful in just the few weeks that he has been president. For one thing, he canceled their Independence Military Day parade and took all the money that was going to be spent on it and gave it as bonuses to the soldiers fighting in the eastern Ukraine. He's also downgraded the presidential expenses and is moving out of the presidential palace into more economical habitation.
Right, modest. We would use the term
more modest and economical habitation.
Right.
All this is very popular. And so it's the opinion polls show that his party is likely to get over 50% in the parliamentary elections this Sunday. which is unheard of in elections in Ukraine. So, you know, we could see some big changes politically in Ukraine because he'll have a fair amount of power. Whether or not he'll keep up this, you know, good guy image and really do something about the corruption in that country, which is really very, very bad.
I was going to say.
Remains to be seen. He's still fighting against an uphill battle.
Now, what about the Ukrainian relations with Russia? Have they improved at all?
Not yet.
Okay. But there was, you know, there's an example of where we were looking for the next point of conflict, particularly with Russia. And of course, there's this new awareness about the potential development of a Cold War with Russia. By the way, what is the relations with Russia and the rest of the European community at this point?
Not very good. But just let me make a point about Ukraine.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Russians have been able to take a tough line. One of the reasons they could take a tough line against the government of Petro Poroshenko is because the government was so weak. Obviously, if they're facing a stronger government, then they will probably have to make some concessions.
Okay. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. We've got a few other items. Let's talk about Salvini and the popularity of his administration. What exactly are we talking about here?
Well, he's absolutely going through the roof. It looks like the latest thing is 50% approval rating. 50% of the people said they would vote for Matteo Salvini. Again, because there are so many political parties and a proportional representation system, 50% is a huge number. His hardline immigration policy is paying off.
Okay, now let's talk about that.
I should also add that the number of immigrants arriving in Italy
mm-hmm.
has dropped from 181,000 last year to, I think, is it 36 or 26,000?
Well, okay, what's the coverage of that in the European community? Just out of curiosity, are they taking it in stride? Are they criticizing him? What's the situation?
Well, both. You know, they don't like him.
Well, that's fine, but he's also,
I mean,
he's staunchly.
His language is very similar to Trump's.
Okay, okay, okay.
He blames immigrants for just about everything.
And by the way, one of the issues I've just got to touch on this before we go to the break related to the populist movement in the European community, and that is the frustration that many countries have had over the failure of these immigrants to assimilate. And we've seen this in areas in UK, in Sweden, in Germany. I'm stunned.
I made my point earlier about second generation. I'll just stick to that.
Okay. I'm just stunned. And yet here Italy is actually
the immigration problem in Europe is relatively new. You know, it's just in the last generation. It's true. I mean, the Netherlands, it didn't start until 1970.
Well,
basically the same in the UK. Europe was pretty homogenous.
Oh.
Until about 1970, when people started coming in from the former colonies in order to fill job vacancies.
Okay.
There was a labor shortage, and so they recruited from the Caribbean, Africa, and Asia, and so forth.
All right. Let's take a quick break. We're going to wrap things up here in just a moment. We're going to be talking about steaks, and I'm talking about the type that you eat. Very interesting story associated with that here with Viewpoints Around the World and Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, we're going to get to the issue of lab-grown steaks. Unfortunately, I've got to bring up a topic that's kind of, I hate to even bring this up. The new Ebola threat, there's Ebola. What's happening in Africa?
Yes, it's starting again.
Okay, and it's getting very little international coverage here in the States. What about in the international community?
It's been carried to the city of Goma,
right,
in the Congo,
right,
by a pastor,
mm-hmm.
who was administering to people who did have Ebola in the countryside, and he was touching them, laying his hands on them, and things like that.
So,
and he went back to his main parish in Goma, and of course he was infected.
And he infected.
Goma is a city of 2 million people.
So is there a quick question, because we got to move to the last item, but is there a concern that there may be a new pandemic?
Yes.
Okay.
There is.
I think
it's concern. I mean, you've got 2 million people there.
Right.
Who are being exposed to Ebola. You know, any big city, they travel a lot to and from the city.
Right. And
you've got a problem.
We can imagine that. All right. We're going to wrap it up. I hate to make these two stories, back to back. But let's talk about your topic of steaks.
Yeah, do you like throwing steaks on the barbecue?
Oh, absolutely.
Ah, well, in about a year or two, you'll be able to grow steaks or barbecue steaks that were grown in a lab.
Somehow, that doesn't seem all that appealing.
From bovine cells.
That does not sound very appealing.
I don't see why not. I mean, don't you like Israel?
Well, yes.
Yeah, they're coming from an Israeli lab.
I still does not sound that appealing. Lab-grown steaks. And when do we anticipate them hitting the market?
2021.
Okay, well, I've got folks who are already lining up to make an investment. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. And Tom, I'm curious, will you be interested in being one of the first taste testers?
No, I'm a sausage man myself.
Oh, well, hey, I'm sure that can be made very easily as well in the lab. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, very best to you.
You too, Lockwood.
Viewpoints around the world.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.